Hi everyone, my name is Neil Wilkinson. I am the Content Development Manager for Pearson VUE in Europe, the Middle East and Africa. And I'm here today with a panel of experts across Pearson VUE to talk about the importance of balancing candidate experience with test integrity. So across the assessment industry, there's an interesting relationship between security and candidate experience. We know this from other parts of our lives. You know, think about the intrusive searches you have to have at airports, think about being woken up by your neighbor's car alarms, or the frustration of having to change your password with ever-increasing levels of complexity every few months. So given that that happens in our regular lives, it's really no surprise that this happens in high-stakes exams too. So these exams, they have significant consequences for test takers, in the wider community, or for employers and professions. And they definitely meet this intersection too. So today I'm speaking to people from around Pearson VUE about how we get the balance right between test integrity and the candidate's testing experience. So I'm going to go around the panel and get them to introduce themselves. So why don't we start with Casey?
I'm Casey Kearns. I'm Director of Product Management, where I focus primarily on our test authoring, publishing, and delivery platforms. And I've been at VUE for just about 12 years. Thanks for having me, Neil.
Thanks, Casey. And why don't we now go over to Katie?
Thanks, Neil. I'm Katie Schmidt, and I'm a program manager on Pearson VUE's security team. And I get the privilege of working with our team of security experts who manage a wide range of security activities, including anywhere from candidate misconduct and fraud investigations to web monitoring, information security, and even data forensics and analysis. And I'm excited for our conversation today. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Katie. And finally, Jack.
Hi, Neil. My name is Jack Perrin. I'm head of programs at Pearson VUE. As an organization, the program management team are responsible for serving over 500 clients globally. And those responsibilities range from the initial contract mobilization, where we work with clients to understand their customer experience and security requirements as part of the onboarding process, through to implementing new services and features, such as enhancements to the overall candidate journey.
Thanks, Jack. So, Jack, you work really closely with clients, with a wide variety of clients across the business. So you get a lot of insight into what those clients and those test sponsors are currently doing. So what do you see as the sort of top priorities across the testing industry and your clients in particular at the moment?
Yeah, well, you know, as part of the onboarding process, we work with our clients to explore those priorities, the depth of the candidate experience, test security, and requirements of the service as they interact and flow through the overall candidate journey, all with the aim of ensuring that what we're providing and implementing is fit for purpose and meets the priorities of their program. Once we've been through the onboarding process, you know, we're constantly working with our clients to reassess their needs and priorities of the program as the testing landscape evolves. And, you know, those priorities do really depend and vary on the industry that the client operates within. And I know Katie has more experience in this arena, but a common theme that my team have spotted and observed is with combating organized cheating and fraud, that is a top priority for our clients. And we work with our clients to talk through the impact of those security breaches relevant to their industry and consider the appropriate responses available, such as revoking tests or even implementing sanctions.
Thanks, Jack. And so Casey, Jack was talking about just sort of general things that are affecting clients in particular, you know, with a focus on those kind of organized gangs. But what changes have you seen in the expectations of candidates over the past few years? What's kind of happening there?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're seeing that experiences from other aspects of life are really changing what candidates expect from the assessment part of their life. And it's happening in two different dimensions. One is topically related, meaning that aspects of school or more generically learning and work are finding their ways more and more into exams. But it's also happening kind of experientially related, meaning that aspects of business conducted with retail or professional services or how you interact with technology, that's all becoming more normal for assessment. So for example, the pandemic forced us all to change the way that we accomplish things that were previously thought to be like in-person activities. This could be like seeing the doctor, buying or selling a car, even just where you were working from or where you were doing school from. Now, many of these had sort of nascent virtual or remote options previously, but it was really the acceptance that changed. The acceptance of these experiences moving to new modalities has changed the way that some of the candidates and test owners are expecting their assessment experiences to be offered. And of course, we're all impacted by changes in technology, the way that organizations, companies, governments, service providers use technology, and then how candidates are interacting with or using those technologies has subtly changed expectations on best practice. So for example, using SMS text messages or other chat applications as an official communications method, or using a mobile phone to register and schedule for an exam that has tremendous consequences for them. These are now the norm. And what that means is that all of us have to be more in tune with our customers. If you, for example, we've invested in bringing in experts in customer experience to help make sure that we're delivering modern, friendly, world-class experiences for test owners and their candidates. And at the end of the day, as Jack was talking about, you know, it's really these expectations and how test owners think about them. They have to consider what's best for their program. It's going to be maybe a little bit different for each program, but we're here to support our clients as they go through that journey.
Thanks, Casey. Your point about using your phone and text messages made me kind of smile, because I'm definitely still of a generation where if I have to write an important email, it has to be on a desktop and I'm never doing that on my phone. Whereas I think if you're a little younger than me, you'd just be getting your phone out and WhatsApping it.
I know. Who would have thought that a communications method where people are using emojis and shorthand LOL is now like, hey, you're scheduled for an exam and it's this date and this time and this location. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think surely we're going to be using AI to kind of mark emojis and which are the appropriate to send your boss at any given time. All right, Katie, so a question for you. You know, there's obviously a range of security methods that people can use in their exams. How do clients and test owners decide what the right ones are to use in their program if there's so many options available?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll piggyback a little bit on what Casey mentioned first. And first of all, we know that technology is constantly evolving in ways that help improve the candidate experience. And on the security side of things, technology is also improving and changing in ways that we have to prevent and detect fraud. But on the flip side, we also know that bad actors are using new ways to steal content and gain advantages on exams. So with that in mind, and with all these continuous changes in mind, I think it's important to remember that making a decision on the right security methods right now is not a one and done, but it's a constant reevaluation. So reevaluating often is really important. So with that in mind, I'll try to give some more concrete examples of what some of our clients do to help decide what's right for their program. First of all, I find that most of our clients first like to gain a really strong knowledge of what all of their options are and what are the pros and cons of each of those options, both from a test security standpoint and that candidate experience standpoint. And in addition, there are other things to consider, like data privacy and cost, and the list can go on. And then from there, a lot of our test sponsors like to kind of think about what their overall risk tolerance is and whether there are other security layers that can be added or other ways that they can enhance the candidate experience where they feel they haven't been able to maybe choose either what's best for that candidate experience or for their security options. Just one example, I think an example most of us are familiar with are the decision about online proctored exams versus testing in a brick and mortar site. So if I'm a test sponsor, I might understand all of my options and the pros and cons, and security might be really important to me. But I also have a challenge where my candidate just can't find transportation to test centers. So if I choose test center only, I'm leaving out a large group of my candidate and my testing population. So because of that, I need to choose online testing. And what I could do then is layer in additional security controls. For example, I can wait to release scores until after I do a data analysis. I could have more strict repercussions for any misconduct that's detected. And again, the list can go on there. And then one additional thing I think it's really important for folks to remember is that security is a really important component to the candidate experience. And the reason for that is because security, it's a critical component of what allows a credential to retain its value. So your candidates are really looking for a credential that has value now and in the long term.
Thanks for that. So you talked, Katie, you just talked about how people like choose between the right security methods? And Casey just mentioned about expectations shifting over time. But Jack, from your experience, do clients sort of feel challenged by this shift? Because there is this kind of balance between, you know, the needs of the candidate, the needs of the program, and quite frankly, the expense of introducing these things.
Yeah, no, you know, quite right, Neil. And I wouldn't say challenged. I would say our clients embrace the shift, and they're constantly looking for ways to improve the testing experience and the overall quality of service whilst considering the costs associated with it, as you've just alluded to. And there are opportunities to improve experience without sacrificing integrity. And Casey's touched on what the customer experience team do and how they focus on that. But yeah, we work with our clients on the candidate journey to review where changes can be introduced, how we prioritize those changes as well to bring about the greatest benefits. An example of the shift, and also thinking about the balance between customer experience and integrity as well. We're seeing for large scale, high stakes, event-based testing, there's a gradual move away from, say, forced exam times and even quarantine periods to more of an increased item bank utilizing multiple test forms. So the idea behind the forced start times was to protect test content integrity, where candidates may be required to wait in a test centre for an exam to begin at the same time in multiple geographies. As an improved customer experience, we're seeing a shift to a greater use of test forms and randomised test items, whereby a candidate testing in Sydney will see a different form and order of questions as a candidate also sitting the same exam in London. You know, and here you could argue that test content integrity is maintained. Customer experience is improved by way of a shorter wait time, you know, no quarantine period. And there's also an increased flexibility, so candidates can choose what appointment works for them rather than being told when to start their test.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. And I think this is a good example of the fact that this friction doesn't just exist between the candidates and the provider of the test, but also with the people who are developing the test. So, you know, I'm going to put my content development and measurement hat on. And, you know, I would advocate strongly that a larger event window probably is a better experience for candidates, definitely gives them more flexibility, as you say. But it does come with the kind of downside in a way that you have to then generate a lot more content, you have to generate more exam forms, and you have to do a lot more work to make sure the testing experience remains fair across everyone that takes the exam, whether it be on the first day or the last day. So you do have to kind of balance those extra costs, those extra resource, the development time and all of the extra effort that multiple forms might generate. But ultimately, it probably is a better experience for everyone.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to the client and their program. And, you know, those programs should assess if those benefits outweigh the cost of producing and maintaining a larger item bank. But I do support those added benefits here, as well as improving the customer experience. You're also mitigating the risk of disruption to the services by not relying on forced start times or even single day testing, as you've said, Neil. You know, if there's sufficient content to allow for a longer test window, then that introduces even more benefits for the candidate and the program.
So, Katie, a follow-up question for you about what the biggest risks are for test owners if the integrity of their exam is compromised.
I think there are a lot of risks, but I'll say what I think are the biggest risks. And again, the risks will really vary based on the type of exam or credential that our clients are giving. But I think the biggest possible risk for some of our clients is a risk to the public good. An example of this might be licensing an unqualified public safety professional or a medical professional that is now unfairly licensed, and they have a potential to cause harm to others if they're incorrectly or unfairly licensed or credentialed in certain fields. So I think that's the biggest overall risk. But another big risk also applies to pretty much all of our test owners, and that's just the risk of the integrity to their credential or to their organization as a whole. So if there's a loss of value or trust in their credential due to cheating and misconduct, it has a significant impact, not just on that particular credential, but it can cause reputational damage for their organization. It can cause a significant amount of financial loss as well for that organization. And then I think another big risk that I'll mention too is just to the candidates. So candidates spend a lot of time working towards and obtaining a credential, and they do that with it in mind that credential will have and maintain its value. And it can cause a lot of impact in a situation where maybe a candidate's required to have a credential for their particular job. And if that credential loses its value, they may need to go out and get a different credential or a different certification. And you just think of all the impact that that has on your candidates. So I think those are probably three of the biggest risks, but the list could go on as well.
Right. So I'm going to ask you a question about taking action in a second, but I'm interested in all of your views actually on the importance of building up a relationship with people who are dealing with security and test integrity issues. So Jack, Casey, any thoughts on the importance of relationships in this kind of security environment?
It's incredibly important to have a strong relationship here. And, you know, the program management team, we try to foster an open and transparent dialogue with our clients so we can really get into assessing the risk, understanding any impact to the programs as a result of the risk of these scenarios happening, or even when we get into working through any security incidents that we need to respond to. So yeah, it's incredibly important, and having that open dialogue really helps to facilitate those discussions.
And I think security is really a community effort. If you think about it, some bad actor in one exam probably won't just end with that one particular exam. If they found value in stealing one thing, it's quite possible that they are looking for other opportunities to, you know, to be bad actors with other exams. Communication between credentialing bodies, between service providers, law enforcement where necessary, security professionals at the different organizations. The techniques shift all the time. The way that we find things shifts as the tactics change, and just kind of understanding what else people are finding and the experiences they have, I think, play a large part.
Right. So, Casey, do you think there are ways that test owners can improve experiences without sacrificing the integrity of the exam? Have you got any examples of what that might look like?
Yeah, as you heard Katie and Jack speak about, we spend a lot of time thinking about experience and security at VU. It's all very personal, that meaning either at the program level or at the test taker level. And one of the things that helps our product managers, and something that I would think would be beneficial for all test owners to think about, would be considering the assessment experience from start to finish, not just the day of button seat testing event, but the entire journey. Kind of piggybacking on something Katie was talking about, if you think about it, the product most test owners are offering is not really the assessment itself, but the outcomes that that assessment can provide to the test taker, the profession, the public at large. They're really service organizations. And when you have that service mindset, you quickly see how the scope of good experiences expands from the testing event to all of the preceding and follow-on activities. So from there, I'd recommend a process called journey mapping. And our customer experience team does a lot of this. Basically, you're evaluating user journeys. And I say journeys because it's important to remember, and actually you'll find out in this exercise, that not all of your test takers or other stakeholders or customers interact with your processes in the same exact way. And so what you're trying to do with this process is understand where the pain points are. And sometimes we call these pain points friction. Like other kinds of experiences, there is good or at least acceptable friction. We call that security. And there is unnecessary friction. And you're really trying to optimize, minimize, or eliminate that unnecessary friction. And you do that by reducing a burden, maybe shifting that burden to another point in the process, or even something as simple as communicating or setting expectations. I'm a visual guy, Neil, and my mind immediately goes to a line graph of candidate stress and frustration over time. And you really want as few peaks as possible. So depending on what your journey mapping tells you, this could be something like updating your application or eligibility vetting process to maybe spread that out over time. It could be introducing higher order or higher fidelity exam items, or it could mean increasing your communication touch points and cadence with test takers, all in the name of figuring out what the best experience for your test takers and your program really is.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the way it's sort of thinking about it much more like holistically, that it isn't just about, you know, changing a security policy or Googling who's a bad actor in your exam. It's much more start to end, whole process. And in fact, the way you describe it, Casey, it sounds like it's more than just the process. It's the whole experience of gaining the qualification and then what happens afterwards.
It really is. It requires some systems thinking, meaning that a shift or change in one area may have some impact on another area. So if you were to change something about the assessment, say, maybe shortening the window or adding exam items to that, you may be changing something else in the process that you didn't mean to change or has some unintended consequences for your test takers or other customers.
Yeah, interesting. And that also feels like you'd have to get quite close feedback from the actual people taking your test. It's not just about you dictating what happens.
You should never be afraid of feedback. And actually, you know, a lot of the process of developing and designing exams is all about feedback, because the people who are writing the questions, which you're very familiar with, Neil, are very frequently the active professionals or retired professionals, and their influence into that process plays out with what you see in the assessment.
Right, exactly. All right, so I feel like we've been talking for a little while now. Katie, Jack, any sort of final thoughts? Maybe I'll go to you first, Katie.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having us. And I love this conversation. And I think we all see things in our daily lives that are improving both security and experience at the same time. And I think in the testing industry, knowing that we have folks who are dedicated to doing that in our industry as well is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, Neil. I think it's important to just keep in mind and also spot continued opportunities that we have to try and strike that balance between candidate experience and exam integrity. These opportunities present themselves almost daily with our clients. So the Pearson VUE team are constantly on the lookout for that.
Great. Thanks very much, Jack. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. If you have any questions, then please get in touch with us. You can find us all on LinkedIn. But otherwise, have a great day. Thanks very much.